Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Mario Coleman and I am the CEO of NCWCC. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to NCWCC Digital Online Radio Broadcast Network and NCWCC Chicago Talk Radio. We change lives.
We change lives.
Good afternoon. I'm your host, Karima Ali. I am broadcasting live from Metro Atlanta, Georgia. Today's show and today's digital network has been a profound opportunity for us to cover an epidemic that has hit our country and involving genocide, self-genocide that has reached an epidemic proportion of young people killing each other. We have a special guest later on in the show that will be coming on, but our goal as the NCWCC Digital Online Broadcast Network is to create platforms for such opportunities and to broaden the platform for information exchange and to cover individuals who are doing extraordinary things in groups across the country. We are having a bit of some technical difficulties. However, we will be bringing our guest on sometime later in the show. It is our hope to be able to bring on Patricia Hunt as well, which is our Emmy-nominated news anchor, news reporter. And when we talk about self-genocide, ending the violence, you're talking about in a Metro Atlanta alone having 10 and 15 homicides a week, young people killing each other over violence and rage. A lot of that is due to the fact that here in the state of Georgia, the programs and social programs that are available are not for a certain type of served community. There have been millions of dollars that have hit the state of Georgia, and access to those dollars have been limited to the individuals who typically have always gotten access to those dollars. And we want to also share with you all that when we are training our youth in something that is of quality to them and it serves their purpose, they will be more attentive to certain dialogue. So as we get a little bit into the concept of what's happening today, I'm going to read something that I got out of the guest that we're going to be bringing on a little bit later into the show. It states, "This treasury of mothers, powerful stories, mothers in the city of brotherly love, whose children were murdered, is offering to us, to a society that has lost its way. It provides a moral compass, which will lead us home, our way back to love." Susan L. Tava wrote this. Our guest today is going to be Dorothy Johnson Spite, the founder and executive director of Philadelphia's Mother in Charge, the organized effort by this woman, women who's lost their loved ones were murdered, all have been deepened by their tremendous loss. Still they suffer, but their suffering hasn't been in vain. It has opened the door to wisdom. It has embodied them. Today, these women are activists. They are spiritual leaders, audacious and brave. They're raising their voices loudly in their communities to end the killing of our young. Mothers in Charge is comprised of mothers and grandmothers and aunts who are committed to working towards saving lives because of the death and the life of their loved one. Each mother and member is committed to saving lives and preventing another mother from having to experience this terrible tragedy. NCWCC, the God Movement, Nashville Peacemakers, and NCWCC Chicago has created a platform to broaden awareness of this health epidemic that is claiming the lives of our young people. Now, alternative solutions in stabilizing the violence are allowing youth to have a voice and provide leadership and allow new 21st century opportunities and expose them to new green economic opportunities. It's very quite possible in the midst of this broadcast today that in bringing up some of the things that have taken place here in Metro Atlanta and across the countries in the cities of Chicago, Philadelphia, you look at these cities, the cities are profoundly led by people who are in our leadership. You have President Obama, the city of Chicago, and you have Vice President Biden from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. These cities had a tremendous amount of situations that took place, and we certainly have looked to those cities for solutions. And one of the things I say about solutions is that when you find a solution of some sort, it allows each one of us a way to rectify some of the things of our past. And one of the things that I've read inside this particular book, Faces of Courage, this particular book talks to the spirit of individuals who have lost their loved ones. And to stop a little bit further into the loss of a loved one, one of the things that I want to share with you is that you can never, ever get back a person. And so we look to each other to come back in a place of love, to offer opportunity. One thing Patricia said, everybody can give back. Every one of us can, in fact, change a life. One of the things that we can do is mentor young people, and it has nothing to do with the church or anything else like that. It also gives us a reflection of where we came from when some of us were a little bit older, grew up in a community where, you know, murders were not prevalent. And so this is a society of people, young people who are just used to this type of behavior. The other thing that I want to also offer you all is we try to get this the studio to bring back up the switchboard, is that as we offer to people this opportunity to just have a platform, it's very imperative that we hold on to certain things in life. So I ask you guys to just continue to listen in as I bring in the switchboard and ask each person to state their name and where they're calling from. Caller from 215, state your name and where you're calling from.
Good afternoon. This is Dorothy Johnson Spite, founder and executive director of Mothers in Charge in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Welcome, ma'am, to the call.
Thank you.
Karima? Area code 503. Please state your
Karima?
Name and where you're calling from.
Karima, this is Patricia Hunt.
Okay, welcome to the call, Patricia.
Yes,
and
wonderful.
Caller from 770-597, state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Sandra Weeks, and I'm calling from Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Welcome, Ms. Weeks. And caller from 706, state your name and where you're calling from.
That was me, Karima, Patricia Hunt from Portland,
okay.
Oregon.
Great. Everybody, welcome to the call. Ms. Hunt, you have the platform. Go ahead, ma'am.
All right. I'm especially excited about Dorothy Johnson Spite. Dorothy lost her son, her 24-year-old son, a beautiful young man, Khalid Jabbar Johnson. Someone literally gunned him down at age 24. Dorothy, bring us in on how that happened.
Yes, thank you. Khalid was my son. He was murdered December of 2001. It was over a dispute about a parking space. He had recently moved into that neighborhood with his half-brother, and there was a very angry, out-of-control person who lived a door away. And there was an argument about the parking space, and he shot colleagues 7 times.
Oh, my God.
This person had also murdered someone else 5 months before. In July of 2001, he murdered Justin Donnelly. He was 19 years old. And 5 months later, he murdered a colleague.
Oh, my God.
So he was found guilty of both murders and serving two life sentences, which, you know, doesn't bring back our children, doesn't really change much other than the fact that he's off the street to not be able to provide this type of hurt and pain and devastation to another family.
Dorothy, what is so impressive about you is that you didn't just mourn the death of your son. You started this organization, Mothers in Charge, and you not only did it in your native country, your native city, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you took the movement, Mothers in Charge, to Atlantic City, New Jersey, Brooklyn, New York, Wilmington, Delaware, and Los Angeles, California. You literally started a campaign to end this kind of violence. Is that right?
That is correct. I did mourn. I did do that. I mean, for the first 2 years or the first year and a half, I think I was out of my mind. I think that Mothers in Charge provided a way out of my pain and my anger, or at least provided an opportunity to help me deal with the pain and the anger and the tears and everything that I felt. I don't want people to think that initially I just got up and started Mothers in Charge, because it wasn't that way. I mean, I still live with the pain every day of his death, and it's something that is so, so devastating to families who have to go through this, that it takes time, you know, to become active. We have a lot of members that are new members in our organization, and we said we don't want you to think about being the activist or the community, you know, involved in the community. We just want to take care of you and help you through that grief process. And then at some point when they're stronger, as I was able to say, you know, I'm not going to allow this person to claim two lives. You know, I'm not going to let him take my son's life and my life too. And at that point, and I'm not sure just when that happened or what caused it to happen, that I decided I had to do something.
Dorothy, you have a master's degree in psychology, and you are a family therapist. I'm sure all that helped in this process.
It helped to understand, to know what I needed to do. It helped. I'll just put it that way. It did help.
Yes, you're quite a lady. You're quite a lady. Tell us about your book, Faces of Courage. I believe it's a compilation of women of courage who really took their experiences and turned it into something of an activism.
Yes, the book was a way to get a message out. I think oftentimes when things happen in our community, violence and loss of life through violence, you know, we see a 60-second clip, and that's all we see and that's all we know. We don't really know the journey of those families who've had that horrible experience. So Mothers in Charge, Faces of Courage, our book, was a way to let people know the journey of this type of traumatic grief. But it's sad. There are 26 mothers that are, you know, featured in the book, and it tells the story of their loss and what happened and their journey on their grief. But it's also, I think, encouraging and inspiring to anyone who reads it to know that in spite of some of the most horrifying tragedies that we experience in life, that something can come out of it that's positive if we only get the strength and the support we need to work to that point. So it's a beautiful book. It was the photographs were done oftentimes at the scene of the crime where the person with the child was murdered. The mothers went back and allowed the photographer to interview them in their homes as well. And just to share the pain and grief, but also the resiliency that these women have to find themselves now on the front lines working to make a difference with the issue of violence.
Yes. You are doing some interesting things with elected officials where legislation for preventing this violence in our communities is concerned. Talk about that. I know you have an important alliance with Vice President Joe Biden.
Well, we actually had a chance to meet and talk, and he too has lost a child, so he understood that part of the challenge in life, you know, that we are both facing with that type of loss. We actually took a picture together. We were at it was a forum at the University of Pennsylvania, so I've been in touch with his office since then. But it's important to get involved. Everything is so political, even when you just want to save lives. There's a whole political, agenda or arena you have to kind of enter into. So we do work with elected officials. Some of the work that we've done has been to address the issue of the proliferation of guns in our community. I mean, oftentimes these young people, whether they're teenagers or young adults, are angry and out of control, and the fact that the guns are so easily accessible, that is, I think, one of the main causes of the bloodshed that we see in our communities, that, you know, kids can get their hands on a gun before they can a textbook, and there's something real wrong with that. We have worked with a lot of elected officials and legislators around safe gun laws, you know, and unfortunately we live in a state that see guns as a Second Amendment right, and that's what we constantly hear from some of the organizations that are for Second Amendment right folks, and don't see the importance of safe gun laws. And I think that that needs to be addressed across the country, which is one of the things that we want to organize so that we'll be a voice across the country on these kinds of issues. There was a law that we were trying to get passed here in Pennsylvania that simply had to do with reporting a gun lost or stolen. Oftentimes the guns that end up in a teenager's hands or in criminal, you know, people that couldn't go in and walk into a retail store and buy a gun because of the criminal history, these guns end up in their hands, and oftentimes the owners will say that they were lost or it was stolen and they didn't know what happened to it, and then it ends up at a crime scene, you know. So even getting a law passed, something as simple as, you know, reporting a gun lost or stolen, we came across a lot of opposition, and that's something you would think that wouldn't be a problem. Anybody who loses a car, the first thing you want to do is call the police and report your car has been stolen. So we thought that would be an easy pass, you know, through Harrisburg here, but unfortunately it got fought on every level, and that's because they have an organized organization here, National NRA, who, you know, fights very hard against
that's
that
the National
kind of thing.
Rifle Association,
yes,
right?
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Very powerful organization.
Let me ask a question here. There's a what about the churches? I mean, we're talking about self-genocide. We're talking about a self-love that is lost with inside these young people. What has been the input of the churches or the ministries, the faith-based ministries? Have they got behind this yet?
I think they have on some level, but I would say we need more. I mean, there's some churches that are involved, you know, some religious organizations that are involved. One is Heeding God's Call, where they were actually instrumental in getting one of the gun stores shut down that were selling guns to store purchasers. So there's been some involvement with different organizations, but clearly it hasn't been enough. I don't see them kind of at the forefront of this epidemic that is happening in our community. And I pray that changes. That's my prayer.
What about alternative opportunities, alternative solutions, as I mentioned earlier, trying to get the switchboard up? The young people, we're working with, and you'll be on our AM show on tomorrow with called the God Movement. It's a movement of young people who are from 32 years of age to 18 who are really trying to put their hearts and their souls and giving themselves back to God in their way, in the way that they can give.
Wow.
You know, you give. So we are looking at this God Movement, these young folks are. And so what I was going to say to you is, what about training? What about giving them opportunities, alternative ways for them to become self-sufficient so they can have still self-value? What's happening there? Have you gotten involved with anyone that is doing something like that?
I haven't on a large level. You know, I think it's going to take the work of organizations like yours to really kind of lead the charge with that. Because of the economy and what is happening with the budget cuts across the country, a lot of the training programs and things like that have been cut, especially for those, you know, reentering our community. They've been cut. So I think it's going to take us to be creative in terms of how we kind of get these things back into our communities to be able to help, because truly economics and poverty is, you know, a part of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be, you know, left up to us. I don't think that, you know, right now with the things that have happened, I know in Pennsylvania and other areas surrounding us that there have been lots of budget cuts and training programs and reentry programs and things that help people, you know, transition from one situation to another, you know, economically. It has not, there's not a lot of dollars out there for that.
Karima, why don't you speak to the possibility of training where NCWCC is concerned?
We can get back with that after we take this little moment, this little commercial break. So we'll be right back with you guys.
Great.
Welcome back to the NCWCC Digital Online Broadcast Network, and I have online with me Mrs. Dorothy Spite, Dorothy Johnson Spite, and
good.
Patricia Hunt. And we're talking today about stopping, ending self-genocide, ending the violence. And we have today a very profound woman who has engaged in leading the charge, and I want to get back with the question that you had in the time.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, Karima, NCWCC has an effort that needs to be talked about right now because so much of this violence is due to the fact that so many young men and young women are out of work. Speak to that, would you?
Yeah, we founded the NCWCC NCWCC Building Youth Program, which is a green technology, construction technology, applied science, and integrated information technology program. It is curtailed for 21st learning opportunity, cutting edge, bringing in young people because they themselves are very easily to adapt to any of the electronics, any of the digital learning. They can build websites. You see what they do in video, but they don't understand how to market themselves and how to that their value that they know just their knowledge is marketable to turn them into jobs. So we talk about green energy and green technology all the time, but what are those jobs and what do they look like? What are those careers? How do they get approached? And so we've partnered up with our Bay Partners network of partners with green building products and green energy people like Denby Energy, Mike Denby from Denby Energy, who's created a unique program for people who are at ages 7 years of age to 13 that can become junior energy auditors, bringing themselves values, bringing themselves worth. And we can get them early on. That's one thing Mike said. If we can capture them before they're pretty much in a desolate place, it allows those young people to be able to embrace this new generation of workforce development that's taking place. So, you know, that's something we'll get into on to another show. But what I will say is that I think that we're always encouraged to get behind any type of movement like this. And I realize that today and when we were able to be blessed with meeting Clemmie Greenlee, who is how we actually got connected to Dorothy. And she's a wonderful woman, and I wanted to echo what you were saying, but she ran her program with just over $1,500. Remember she said that, right?
So yes,
it doesn't take a lot. It does not take a lot of money. The program that we have is not funded, and I repeat, not funded by no government entity. Donations are minimal. And so we pull all of our corporations' pockets and some of our board members' in-kind donations to run almost a $252,000 program when it's all said and done. And it's done in in-kind donations, and it's also done in not far as money-wise, but men and women donating their time. The young lady that was on just a second ago, Ms. Weeks, she donated a lot of time and effort. So time is money, and that is how we're able to run our program. And so it doesn't take that much. I mean, and Clemmie said she only had $1,500 to get her started or less. So it doesn't take much to impact a lot. So I do challenge the fact that, Ms. Dorothy, that we could actually do something with pennies on the dollar. Any kind of movement is better than no kind of movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of times that's how things grow to be, you know, life-changing. It starts small, but it, you know, with a lot of effort and a lot of passion behind, you know, from different people and different organizations and different resources, it can really, you know, be a life-altering experience for especially young people who need that today in the worst way.
Dorothy, there's something you said that I want to echo right here and now. You said there's not enough outrage among the general public over what's going on in our communities. Expound on that.
Yeah, I mean, I say that all the time, and it sounds like, I mean, I just don't understand how there's so many murders going on in our communities, and we're losing so many of our loved ones, and there's no outrage. I mean, I think a part of it is people just don't know what to do. They don't know how to deal with it because it's such an overwhelming.
What can the ordinary person do?
I mean,
you hear there's a lot of murders going on in your community. What can the ordinary person do to try to stop some of these murders?
Our organization is constantly recruiting folks. I mean, recruiting volunteers. And we ask them to do whatever they have a skill or gift to do or a passion to do, whether it's mentoring, whether it's helping a young person, a child read who's maybe not doing well academically in school, because if you know that they're not doing well in school, they won't succeed in life in a healthy way. So anything that a person has a skill or a gift or a passion about. There's a young lady who her only son was murdered a few years back, and she came to us, and she's grieving, and she's, you know, hurting, and she kind of helped her get back on her feet with our grief support program and the network of supports that we, you know, offer to families who've been affected by violence. And today I look at her and so many others. She has a gift for modeling. So we have a group of girls that we mentor to once a week. They come from a residential placement. So she's got a whole modeling program that she's developed to help these girls feel good about themselves and teach healthy self-esteem and healthy relationships and all that. And we do the same thing for the boys in that same facility. So, I mean, we have volunteers that come and do different things. So it kind of depends, I guess, on what your passion is, you know, what you can do. It's more or less just giving back and helping someone know that they're cared about. Sometimes that makes the difference in a young person's life, that they won't go pick up a gun because they know someone cares or someone's, you know, pouring something positive into them.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to say this much. We got about a minute left. I want to thank you for coming to the show. How can people get in contact with you, Ms. Spike?
Well, our website is mothersincharge.org, and you can also purchase the book that you talked about earlier, Mothers in Charge, Faces of Courage. The book can be purchased online as well. There's all the ways you can contact us, you know, whether you're in the, you know, on the east side of the country, northeastern part of the corridor. You know, we have the New York chapter, the New Jersey chapter, and we're here at the headquarters in Philadelphia. Our information is on the website. Our phone number is 215-228-1718. That's 215-228-1718. Call us and see how you can get involved. Maybe if you're interested in starting something in your area, in your city, you know, we can help with that. So we just need people to get involved with this epidemic, this urban genocide. That's what it is.
Okay. All right, ladies, thank you so much for the show. You guys have a great evening.
Thank you for the opportunity.